This episode of Scene Report is brought to you by Super Burrito. Super Burrito is a New York taqueria serving San Francisco Mission-style burritos, quesadillas, tacos, and bowls since 2017. It is located in Rockaway Beach and Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Super Burrito is owned and operated by my homie Eugene, who grew up in San Francisco. Eugene is obviously very proud of being from the 415 area code, and Eugene tells me that customers in New York often say to him that it's the closest thing to a San Francisco burrito that they've tasted in New York City. I have learned so much about Mission style burritos from Eugene and from Super Burrito, just hearing from him about the history and the culture of those burritos in San Francisco. I had been to the Bay Area, San Francisco, the Mission a handful of times and eaten a whole bunch of burritos whenever I was there. There's all these different style of burritos from different parts of the United States, different parts of Mexico, right? Like a burrito in Juarez, Mexico, or a burrito in New Mexico, or a burrito in LA versus a burrito in San Diego versus a burrito in San Francisco. They all have their own specific styles. And the Super Burrito, what makes it so awesome is just like a huge burrito full of rice, beans, your protein, you know, pico de gallo, avocado, sour cream, cheese. When I went out to San Francisco the last time, Eugene sent me to some of their favorite places like Taqueria El Buen Sabor, El Castellito, La Taqueria, El Farolito, Taqueria Cancun. And after eating at all those spots, I was like, yes, I can tell the obsessiveness and the detail that Eugene was putting into trying to create his favorite childhood burrito spots, but bring them to the East Coast. Super Burrito is my personal favorite burrito that you can find in New York. Just the love and care that goes into every one, the way they roll it up and the sauces all mixed together and the juice and the grease from the meat is falling out and you get those little pockets of joy in every single bite of that burrito that you take. Super Burrito is a taste of the Bay in every bite. And as a special promo to our listeners, if you say the words Scene Report at the register at either the Williamsburg or Far Rockaway locations of Super Burrito, you will get 10% off your order. And now, here's our episode. What is good, Scene Report people? I am your host, Reed Dunley. Thank you so much for tuning in to episode number 4 of Scene Report. We've got a cool one for you. We have Talkbeer, a punk band from Barcelona, Spain, and we sat down with the singer, whose name is Now, who is originally from Morocco. And Talkbeer is a band that I found out about fairly recently. I think a lot of the world found out about this band fairly recently. Guess where I found them? I found them on Instagram. Apparently that's where people find music these days, and saw a video of them. Like 6 months ago, probably. And was like, damn, okay, what the hell is up with this band? They look cool. Went and found their EP on La Vida Es Un Moose, which, if you're unfamiliar, La Vida Es Un Moose is kind of like the top dog European DIY punk label, kind of put out all of the coolest bands from that part of the world, up-and-coming DIY punk bands, but honestly, from all over different parts of the world, too. Very global taste over there from Paco at La Vida Es Un Moose, based in London, the UK. And yeah, I heard this record, saw some videos of this band, I was like, this band is cool. And then, a few months after that, we were all kind of stoked when it was announced that they were going on tour with Haram. And Haram is a punk band from New York City, sings in Arabic. Talkbeer sings in Darija, which is like Moroccan Arabic. And Haram had not been playing shows for a while, since before COVID. This was kind of their little reunion, new lineup situation. Now with a little more Johnny Hummus on guitar. I think they actually sort of broke the news that they had this new lineup going on right here on episode number one of Scene Report with Johnny Hummus. And you should go listen to that episode after this one if you haven't. And honestly, you should also go listen to an episode from my most previous podcast called Protest and Survive. Did an episode with Haram after Haram went and toured Southeast Asia. It's actually on the same feed for this podcast. So if you just kind of scroll down a little bit, you'll find that one in the archives. First interviewed Nader, how I really got to know Nader, for a video piece that I did on Haram at this news website I used to work at called Circa. And honestly, like, it was cool for me to get to hear a bit about Now's story and her involvement and place in the punk world, because like she very much was like, I am a Harami punk, like I am of the scene that Haram started. And back when I was interviewing Nader in, like, you know, 2016, 2017, there wasn't like a big like American punk band singing in Arabic before it was Haram. Back then, sort of hearing what Nader was saying about wanting to see like his culture and his people represented in the punk scene. Now we're kind of fast forward a bit, and we're kind of seeing like the next wave of that, and other bands, newer bands singing in Arabic, or in this case, Darija. And it was a cool little full circle moment in my head, sitting across a table from these sick punks, and sitting across the table from Now and hearing about her life story. You know, speaking of, we broke episode one, we broke that news that Haram was getting back together with a new lineup. I don't know if this is breaking this news so much, but I do feel like it's important to say on the record here. We speak about it in the interview, and you'll kind of hear what Now has to say about it. But I do want to say that Now is from Morocco. The rest of this band are Spanish white guys. And I do think that, like, you know, given that this band wears face coverings, that there was probably an assumption, and you can say what you will about if and how that assumption is supposed to be corrected or not, whatever. But I think a lot of people, especially before they came to the US, kind of like thought that this was a band of like all Moroccan people, whether or not they lived in Morocco or not. But it ain't. Now is Moroccan. The rest of the band is not. And when I saw this band, I didn't know that they were had a bunch of like Spanish people playing in the band. Now I do know that. And now you, the listener, know that. Yeah, I don't really feel like it's necessarily my place here to state a lot of opining on that. But I do think that it's worthwhile to point that out, because, you know, this band hasn't done a lot of interviews. Now it's definitely done like a handful, a little grip of interviews, like a short Maximum Moroccan Roll one, apparently like a Vice one, some like European Vice one that I hadn't come across. I read this interview on this website called The Quietus that I was not familiar with, which is kind of like how I got to know more about Talk Beer a little bit before seeing them play. But now you, the listener, after sitting down and listening to this conversation, you're going to know a whole lot more about Talk Beer and about Now's story. This band really started as like a bedroom COVID project, just Now and one other member chilling up in the crib, you know, making some music, decided to record it in the house. Interestingly enough, Now was walking into this recording thinking that she was going to be singing in English, and then was just like, you know what, actually I think I'm gonna sing in Darija, in my mother language. And we definitely talk a bit about, you know, the significance of that, and I like what she has to say about it. And we get into, you know, other parts of Now's life before starting this band and immigrating to Europe as a little kid, and, you know, early memories from Morocco. We talk about like her family and her relationship with her family, who does not necessarily share her same like social, political, ideological ideas. And of course that conversation kind of brought me back to my conversations with Nader from Haram as well. Something that we had spoken about. Again, another little full circle moment for this podcast host. And another thing that I was really interested in speaking to Now about was just kind of like her relationship with Morocco and the international Moroccan community now, and sort of like didn't really find her version that made a lot of sense to her through her family, but kind of getting involved in like the global music scene and the underground music scene, was able to go back to Morocco to go to like a queer music festival and DJ at that festival and kind of like see all that. And sure, you know, call me corny, but like, you know, music is sick. It's a sick way to sort of like find the cool stuff going on in the world and find your own place in it. It's like, I definitely have spent my life traveling the world, going to like the punk show when I get to town, and sometimes going straight from the airport to the punk show. Right. And of course, like, yeah, like going on tour and finding your way around the world that way. But even just like visiting places and getting to know places and kind of finding the people who are in your scene and in your community through that is a cool way to travel. So cool way to see the world, cool way to get to know the world. And, you know, this was obviously, this little tour for Talk Beer was like a big deal for Now. Like, this is her first band. She was able to come to the United States. She was able to play with Haram, with a band that she's really into and really looked up to. And yeah, their shows that I saw were fucking lit. Like, they put on a great show. It was like, it was wild to be up in those crowds. Like, you could like, you know, I don't know. Like, I guess I'm old or some shit, but there was a point in time where you go to a punk show and there was like a little bit of, there was a little bit of space around. You could kind of like move and mosh, slam, whatever. But it's like when Talk Beer hit the stage, it was just like a swell of people. Just like, I don't know. Just like a swell, a wave of people, just like the crowd became its own thing and you did not have control of like where you were in that crowd. It was kind of wild. It was maybe one of the venues was a little bit oversold at the show that I went to. It was like kind of intense up in there. But yeah, it was awesome to see them play. It was awesome to get to sit down with Now and hear about the things that make her tick and hear about what she's trying to do with this band and what this band means to her. And I'm grateful for her taking the time to share that story with me and with the listener, with y'all. So yeah, let's get to it. This is someone who can speak better to the story of Talk Beer than I can. Here is Now, lead vocalist of the band Talk Beer from Barcelona, Spain, on Scene Report. Scene Report. We got Now on the mic.
Hello, assalamu alaikum, everybody.
What's good? How are you?
I'm good. Last day of tour.
Yeah, you're on tour with your band Talk Beer.
That's it, with Haram. And this is our last date in New York again, Transpicos.
Your first US tour.
Yeah.
Your first time in America.
First time in America.
Your first time playing 5 shows in a row.
Yeah, true.
How's it all feel?
Wow. I have no words. Like, I'm between tired and excited at the same time because it's been like a really great experience. But yeah, I'm very tired.
Yeah. How long have the days been? Have you been waking up early, waking up late? Driving?
Well, it's not the driving, the waking up early is not the problem. I think when I came to New York, I got injured on my feet. So it's kind of like...
From what?
I was walking. Well, I don't know what's happening in my feet because I don't have insurance and I don't want to go to the hospital because I'm broke. So I don't know. I was just walking. I had my boots on and I think I just had like liquid retention on my feet. So it got just very inflamed. But when I don't have my shoes on, it's okay. So that's why I think I'm more tired as usually. Because it's kind of frustrating. You cannot even walk. So, yeah.
Do you have your shoes on right now?
Yeah, I have my shoes on. But I'm sitting.
Do you need to take them off?
No, it's okay. It's okay.
I hate shoes.
Yeah.
And I hate socks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you hate socks?
I hate socks.
I actually love socks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if your shoes are off, you have your socks on.
Yeah. Yeah. You know that I sleep with socks on.
Really?
Yeah. I know a lot of people hate this, but I don't know. I feel really like I can be completely naked, but my socks stays on.
Always. 24 hours a day.
24 hours
even
a day.
Even when you take a shower?
Nah, yeah. I'm not going that far away, but maybe in the future I will think about that.
Maybe they make like a shower
waterproof socks. Oh, that would be great.
Go swimming in the ocean with your socks on.
Wow, that's actually very practical, because in the beach sometimes you get hurt, you know, because of the sand. I don't know, just if someone are planning to do like a waterproof socks, please hit me up.
So what do you want to talk about first? Do you want to talk about your band first, or do you want to talk about your life first?
Oh, whatever you want. I think that Takbir is also my life.
Yeah.
So I can, I don't know, talk about myself
yeah.
a little bit.
Tell me where you're from.
I was born in Morocco, Tanja, Charbendiben. And then with my family, we immigrated to Spain when I was really, really young. I was...
How old?
Well, I will say between, yeah, at 5 years old. Yeah, I was really young because I remember starting the school, primary school in Spain. So yeah, very young. Then I was raised in this small town called, well, I don't want to say the name, because then they will be famous and I don't want them to be famous.
Yeah, you want it to be a secret. You don't want to blow up the spot.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, but they were don't super racist. Vacation. So yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I don't want them to have this opportunity to be in your podcast.
Yeah, fuck them.
Yeah, I was actually the second family, like brown collar family in this town. When I moved in, it was so hard because people were so racist. So I was raised really feeling lonely and rejected about like by everyone, mostly everyone. Of course, not everybody is racist there, but it was kind of hard as a young girl to be an immigrant and also not having people like you around you. So yeah, then I went to high school. I got into punk music. I always, when people ask me about how I got into punk, it's kind of crazy because I don't really remember, but I remember being like an internet like rat. I was always on the internet. As I said, I didn't have so many friends, so my friends were online friends and stuff. So
where online?
Oh my god. Well,
what platform?
I remember when I was really, really younger. When I was really, really young, I used to play this this game called Habbo.
Okay, it's a video game.
It's like a video game, but you can chat with people. You can talk with people all around the world. I don't know. It's kind of really like something that I don't know if you guys had this here. I think so, but maybe you don't because I'm younger than you, so I don't know. So yeah, it was this game online I used to play. And then when I grow when I was like at high school, I used this Spanish Facebook called 20.
20?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like kind of MySpace thing, you know? So yeah, I was talking with people. Then I discovered Twitter. This was the worst thing that happened to me, getting a Twitter account.
It's the worst thing that happened to a lot of people.
So yeah, I think I started to being radical when I started to use Twitter. And yeah, I started to meet a lot of people from other cities around mine. And that's how I really started to have like friends. But punk, it was really, I was just listening to music. I liked, when I was little, I used to listen a lot, lots of R&B music, soul, blues music. I love that. So I don't know how. I think it was through reggae. I think it was through, I don't know, something happened to the YouTube and they showed me band. I don't remember what. And it came really naturally. I liked it. And until now, so.
Yeah. I mean, even when I was, I feel like, yeah, I've got a good decade on you. We were talking about our ages on the way over here. And like, yeah, even when I was a kid, like, I think I actually got into music first through like CDs. Like, I would buy CDs and stuff. But then like eventually it was all on the internet.
Yeah.
On like message boards a lot.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
That's how I found about it.
Yeah.
Like bands. But I definitely listened to a lot of reggae first, actually. Probably reggae before I listened to punk. So we're on a similar trajectory.
True.
So you left Morocco when you were around 5 or so.
Yeah.
And then Spain.
Something like that. Yeah.
And then do you have memories of being a little kid in Morocco?
Well, I remember this is kind of crazy, but 2 days before we had to move to Spain, I got lost with my cousin. And I remember actually being in a house with a man I did not know, and then they took us to the mosque and they started to say, "We have 2 young girls here, please come get them." And my
but they
mom
made like an announcement.
Yeah, an announcement
to the whole town.
Yeah. And my mom, I remember my mom freaking out. She was like, "Yeah, we were leaving to Spain, you know, and if we didn't find you, we will probably just go because it's hard to immigrate to Spain, also when you don't have papers illegally. So you just have one chance, and if you fail, you have to start over again." So yeah, it was crazy, but this guy was a nice dude, so he just brought us to the mosque, and then my family came and we went to Spain.
Like 2 days. Like that day?
No, two days later. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, but I remember vaguely. And also I remember some things, like playing with the kids in the streets. Yeah, playing at the rooftop of my grandma's house. Yeah, some small things, but I remember some things, yeah.
Yeah. And then you were Spain, and then where else?
And in France too. Yeah, I moved to France with my family too because my dad lost his job. Because in Spain, there was this like kind of like economical crisis like a few years ago in 2010. Yeah, it's 2010 where construction were literally all the companies were like broke. And my dad was really struggling to have a job and do money for us. So we just said, okay, we immigrate once, why don't do it twice? And we just went to France, south of France, yeah.
Yeah. And then back to Spain eventually.
Only myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went back to Spain in 2018 because I had lots of problems with my family. I had to literally break up with them, like in a certain way. So I was like, okay, I hate France. Literally, I don't want to offend anyone, but yeah, I hate France. It's not for me. And I was like, where should I go? And I never been to Barcelona. So I was like, okay, let's go to Barcelona. It's nice. There is beach, there is mountain. Pretty big town. Let's go, let's see. And until now, so.
And how old were you?
I was, when I moved officially to Barcelona, I was 20 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so in these different places you lived after you left Morocco as a kid, were you with other Moroccan people in the places that you went? It sounded like not in the first place, but like did you still kind of have a connection to that country or that community beyond your family?
Well, it's hard to find someone from my community that accept me the way I am and doesn't judge me, because I'm not a religious person. So I'm a very, I'm very critical with religion. So I get that people, some people have religion as their priority in life. So when you speak up or say some things that they don't agree with, it's kind of hard. So when I was little and I really grow up feeling apart, not only from the Moroccan community, but also from the European community. Because with the whites, I was the Moroccan girl. But with the Moroccan girls, with the Moroccan people, I was like the Occidental, like the Western girl, you know. So, yeah, it was hard to find my place in both communities. So I never really had a relation with people from my community until a few years ago, when I started to hang out and started to listening to North African music more, like Shabi Rai, all this folkloric music. And I started to hang out to these Moroccan spots, places, and had really fun. And I discovered that, yeah, they don't even care. Like, we cannot say that every single person in a community is the same and has the same mentality. But I was so mad at them, because when I was younger, they used to reject me, so I reject them too. I think it's a natural, like, self-defense thing. But yeah, I'm happy then that now I found my place in the Moroccan community too.
So was music the starting point for that? Was that kind of your way in?
Yeah, music.
Seeing it live or just listening to records, or like?
Listening to records, hanging out, going to Morocco again with another perspective, with another people. Because when I was going to Morocco, I always went with my family, and my family, they are very conservative. So they used to tell me, no, these things don't exist in Morocco. No, the Moroccan people will not accept these things, blah, blah, blah. So you have like a bad image about your own community. But then when you are there in your own and you see things and you start to talk with people and start to like communicate in a healthy way and try not to judge anyone, things really changed to me. And I understand now, and I can empathize a lot with them rejecting me because of my politics or my religious opinion. So I think respect is everything, and I respect them, they respect me, and that's great. I think that's the important thing.
Yeah. So would you go back a lot when you were a kid?
Yeah, like, I used to go back a lot, yeah, with like my family.
Every year or
every
something?
Every year, yeah. Every year.
When would you go?
In summer.
Yeah.
Yeah, because on school holidays, we used to stay at my grandma's. And yeah, I used to play with the kids, and I don't know, just having like try to do friends. But as I said, you will always be the Western kid, you know. Then in the West, you are the immigrant. So it's kind of weird when you're a kid, you don't understand these things. But now that I went for the first time in 7 years, because I didn't speak with my family for 7 years. But I went, and I went to this Eid El Taleen, is a queer festival in Morocco. It's the queer section of Harzazet. It's also a alternative festival there. And I went to put some music, to put some records on. And it was crazy. It was life-changing. Because I saw things that my family used to tell me that everything that I am, I'm a product of the West. You know, they used to tell me that you're like this because you were raised in the West, you know? But going back there was life-changing because I was like, okay, these are my people and they are from Morocco and they were born and raised in Morocco. So I'm not a weirdo, you know? So it was really cool. Police came, the army came. It was fucking crazy, but we sorted it out and everything was fine and it was a really good experience, yeah.
Yeah, so that was recently?
Yeah, it was last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, in April.
And you DJ'd at it?
Yeah, I DJ'd at it. Yeah.
And the cops came in during your set, shut it down? They're like, it's too good up in here. The vibes are too...
They were like, oh... This tune, it should be illegal, you know? Yeah, well, they didn't have this kind of like, you know, when because it's a private like spot, you know? So they didn't come in because they didn't have like the paper. I don't know how to say it in English, but you have.
We would call it like a warrant or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
But we were lucky because the next day was the 1st of May and it's like, the Labor Day, so everyone is the day off like worldwide, and we were lucky because the 1st of May we just took our things and just left, and yeah, and the next day was my birthday. I was born on the 2nd May, so it was super nice. I spent my birthday with my friends there in Morocco. I felt like home. I felt love. I felt accepted, and even if we don't agree in everything, I think that it's very important as an immigrant that you can feel that you belong in your own country, you know, with your people, because they are my people too. So yeah, shout out to them. Shout out to my queer people in Morocco. I love them. I miss them. And that's all. I really appreciate all the job they do there. It's not easy. And yeah.
So is that like... That sounds like that was kind of like the first time that you went and saw music or were a part of like some sort of musical experience in your home country. And like,
yeah, because when I used to go with my family, I wasn't able to go around alone. You know, as I said, I came from a very conservative family and it was really hard to me to be like the other kids. You know, I had to be at home at 8 p.m., you know, I didn't really have this experience of hanging out, going to gigs, and, I don't know, just meeting other people at nighttime, you know. So when I just ran away from home, because I call it run away because it was literally running away from my house, I started to experience new things in life, in life like the nighttime, the gigs, the shows, dressing as I want, you know, just freedom, you know, things that normal people do and normal kids do. I didn't had this experience until my 18.
Yeah. And I'm curious, like I definitely don't know a whole lot about like, I don't know. I don't know a whole lot about Morocco as a country, but I definitely don't know about like the music scenes there. Like I watched this one film recently and it was like a concert film. I don't remember what it was called. It was like on Criterion Collection and it was this old band and they had a guitar, but also like a banjo and stuff. It was this long like concert thing. It was really cool. But like, I don't know. What's it? It sounds like you didn't spend a lot of your childhood there, but now you're going back a little bit. Like, is there different cities that have certain types of music scenes there, or like what's it like?
I would say that the city of punk in Morocco, and please don't get offended, people who are from other cities, please just don't get offended. I think the center of punk in Morocco is Darbida, Casablanca. And why? First of all, Darbida in itself, it's chaos, you know? Everyone who went there should know this and should relate to this information. It's chaos. But also, there it's there is
just like the streets and the people.
Streets,
the
people,
cars.
Yeah, traffic. Yeah, yeah. It's I like that a bit, but not. I think I will burn out if I was living there. There is lots of kids there in Casablanca that do stuff. They're doing like fanzines. I don't know. They're trying to create this kind of alternative music community. And I think it's really cool what they're doing. Their job is amazing. Even if it's hard, they're doing great. And also in Morocco, there is a lot of metal bands, a lot of metalheads there. There is a festival in Darbeida called El Boulevard. Shout out to El Boulevard, who do like one day of metal music, and you can see all the kids in the mosh enjoying. So yeah, I will say that Darbeida is like the center of Morocco, yeah, musically and in the alternative scene.
Is that where the festival is that you went to?
No, I went to Rabat. Yeah, I went to Rabat. And yeah, it was not bad, the city. We were at the mountains. Yeah, we were hiding a little bit. And yeah, it was great. I want to go to El Boulevard because I never been to, and I think I will go this year, so I can see with my own eyes everything that's happening there. I think it's important because if I'm representing something, and if the people are like, they expect something from me, I have to spend more time in Morocco. Of course, I get it. I get it, okay? Stop sending me DMs. I will go to Morocco, please.
Is Takbir going to go to Morocco?
I hope so, yeah. I wish, yeah. Of course. We were talking with Haram. I don't want to do spoilers. I don't know if I can say that. But we are planning to maybe, I don't know, work in a Morocco show. Maybe, I don't know, do like, I don't know, something there. I think it's possible. I think we can do it. We just have to organize ourselves and do it right. And I think it will be awesome if we can sort it out and do it. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me about Takbir. When did you start that band? Why did you start that band? Who is that band?
Takbir is a COVID baby.
Yeah.
Takbir started in a bathroom. And
your bathroom?
No. In a bathroom.
Bathrobe.
No.
Bathrobe.
No, bathroom?
Bathroom.
Where you sleep, what do you call you? What do you call it?
Bedroom.
Bedroom, right?
Got it. It started in a bedroom.
Sorry.
In your bedroom?
No, in my friend's bedroom.
Your friend's bedroom.
Yeah, we were just talking about doing music together, and we spent a lot of time together at that time. We just work in Takbir. I was going to record it in English, you know? And like, I think it was 5 minutes, like, before recording the first song, Aisha Kandisha. I just asked him, hey, what if I just translate the song and do it in Darija? You know, like, whatever. And he was like, okay, let's try. We recorded Aisha Kandisha in Darija, and it was great. So we were like, okay, let's do 3 more songs. Put it on Bandcamp as a souvenir, you know, like we didn't expect anything from Takbir, just having fun and do some music together.
Did you record it all in the bedroom too?
Yeah.
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 Everything was
just the two of you.
Two of us. Yeah. DIY 100%. Shout out to him. And
and that person's in the band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the next day or 2 days later, I woke up and it was crazy. Takbir was all over the internet. This guy.
When was this?
4th of February, 2021.
Yeah.
like 3 years ago. And this guy, Harakiri Diaz, on YouTube, he's great. I think he's literally a freak of punk music. You know, I don't know how he find out Takbir, but he uploaded the EP on his YouTube channel, and it was wild. You know, I was seeing my own friends sharing my own music on Instagram, on Facebook. And I was like, should I tell them?
And they didn't know it was
you. No, they didn't. It was a secret. At the beginning, it was a secret, you know?
It was a secret bedroom COVID band.
Yeah, that's it. And there was, I loved how people was like doing this kind of conspirations thing and theories. They were like, yeah, they're anonymous because the Moroccan government will kill them if they know their identities. But it was just a bedroom project, you know. We put Morocco because I was singing in Darija, but we never said that we are based in Morocco, you know. That was people's theory. So we were just like, maybe we should do a band, or maybe, I don't know. But then Paco, La Vida es un Mus, he's great. He's a friend of us now. He emailed us, and I've been following Paco for years. His label, he had Haram on his label too. So he sent us an email. He was like, hey guys, I want to put your EP on my label and have like put some vinyls in, and I don't know, just help you guys. And we were like, yeah, but we are not even a band, you know, we are just a bedroom project. So we talked with some friends and we were like, hey, do you guys want to like do a show with Takbir, and we will see what will happen. And yeah, we were just like, it was so natural. And that's, and now I'm in New York. What? Yeah, crazy.
And you started playing shows and stuff. I saw you guys played some like festivals and whatever. Yeah. Have you toured Europe? Did you play a lot in Barcelona? Like how many times have you played before you came here?
I don't know, maybe less than 10 times.
Yeah,
we don't really do lots of show. I think we maybe do 3-4 shows per year. Now it's been 3 years since we started playing. The first show was crazy, you know, because it was sold out. It was crazy to see how people were singing my own songs in Darija, in the Netherlands, you know? It was kind of crazy. So when I was so emotional that day, I was crying a lot because I met this guy, Yunus. I was at the front door, and he came and he was like, hey, sorry to bother you. Are you Takbir singer? And I was like, yeah, of course. And he was like,
how did he know?
I don't know. He knew because he was a Moroccan dude and we recognize ourselves, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And he came and he was like, I'm from Morocco too. You guys rock. Thank you for what you're doing. Your band really, it's an inspiration for me because I feel you and I understand you. And it was so emotional because it was like healing my inner child. I was like, whoa, I'm doing something. Like, I'm creating like kind of a community. And yeah, it was so emotional. I went to the backstage and I started crying because it was too much. And then we just started to playing more shows. But at the beginning, it was just, let's do a show and we will see what will happen. So yeah, everything was so natural and came in a very spontaneous way, and I'm happy for that. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes me think of a lot of other questions I have. I mean, yeah, have you been able to play in front of a lot of other Moroccan people, and like, what's that experience been like for you beyond that interaction?
Yeah. I think that North African people who come to our shows, are always very thankful, you know? They're always very, I don't know. I honestly see myself in them because when I discovered haram, the first thing I did is look for Nader on the social media and send him a message like that. You know, like, hey, you don't know how important to me is your band, you know, because being North African, well, being from the MENA community and being into punk, it's kind of hard because you don't feel like you really belong there, you know, and having like a community and seeing yourself in others helps a lot. You know, representation is very important, I think. And it's always so cool to meet people. Yeah, in New York, like two, three days ago, I met this girl, Lamia. She came to me, she started to hug me, she started to kissing me. She was like, you don't even know how grateful I am to be here and to witness this with you. And just for that, I think that my job is done, you know? And I feel really, really happy to be part of this.
Yeah, because I'll say, like, the first time I really got to know Nader was interviewing him in a situation like this, right? Like, we were sitting down, like, had the camera on, blah, blah, blah. And he was saying, like, very similar things to what you're saying right now, that, like, he didn't really see other people in the punk scene who are like exactly like him or looked like him or sang in the language that he was singing in. And then all of a sudden, like, he'd play a show and there'd be like two people at this show or three people at this show, or you get a DM from these people. And he was like, it just kind of like built from there. And then it's just like you were just saying, of it being sort of spontaneous and everything kind of coming together. It's like, all right, now you guys are in America on tour with Haram,
and that's all crazy. Kind of
like comes together in a certain way, you know?
Yeah.
What does that feel like?
Wow, I cannot believe it. Honestly, every time I think about it, I get emotional. Because I cannot like stop thinking about, look, I was not lying. I didn't want to cry in this tour, but it's kind of like, I remember that kid that I used to be. I always felt really like alone, and I lost literally all my family, you know? And I think that everyone can relate to this. Everyone that has my same like story can relate to this. And seeing that I'm building my own family, it's just healing that kid, you know. I'm doing it for her too, you know. So I think I get emotional because it's something that I really never thought it was going to happen, and it's happening, you know. And I feel really emotional about it. Thank you.
No problem.
Oh wow, this is super cool.
It's a Texas state flag. It's actually signed by one of my country music heroes.
Oh yeah,
Terry Allen, who lived right around there.
Oh wow,
we got my Texas flag.
You know that I started listening to country music as a joke, and now I like it.
Yeah, yeah. These guys who we're in my friend's wood shop right now. They kind of like made me start listening to country music because we grew up in the middle of the woods.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem.
I think that I've been holding these tears for days now. And
it's your first time crying on the whole tour?
In front of someone? Yeah. it's been too much, you know, because you see people, mostly kids, because yesterday we played in Washington. We did two shows in Washington.
And you did two shows?
Yeah, Matinee and at the night.
That's so Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
To have a matinee. It's old school there.
People were complaining, like, hey, this venue is so small. I think it was like 100 person. So it was sold out very quickly. And the promoter asked us to do like another matinee show. And we were like, yeah, why not? Let's go. And
it was that guy Mark?
No, it was Hassan, I think. His name is Hassan, I think.
Cool.
And I was looking at the crowd, and they were mostly kids, and I felt so good because it was like, yeah, these kids now, they have what I needed, you know? Like someone who's just like them, who was raised in a certain community with some traditions, with they speak a certain language with their families, and they deserve to not, you know, I think that it's very important when you immigrate to love your roots, to accept where you came from. And I think in America it's different because here the MENA population, but almost the Middle Eastern people went through a lot after 9/11. And I feel bad for them because there are some people who change their names and put like literally white names to their kids so they will not be harassed at school or whatever. So I just want them to know that it's okay to be where you, it's okay to accept that you came from this country, and it doesn't, you don't have to be ashamed of your roots and when and where you came from just because there is some hate. And I think that's important too for the kids to know that, okay, you were raised in America, but you are also, I don't know, from Lebanon, you're also from Palestine, you're also from Algeria, from Morocco. We don't care, you know? It's your story too. And story is very important to know where you came from and embrace your roots. I think it's very important. And I'm glad to have this experience because I used to, when I started to experience racism, I used to think, oh my God, I wish I was white, you know? I wish, because life was so easy for white people, you know? But now I'm just like, yeah, I love being from Morocco, and I love my name, I love my skin color, I love how you can tell that I'm not white. And yeah, punk was part of this too. So I just want to take these two things and make it one. And that's how Takbir, it's so important to me too. It's part of my life now.
Yeah, and I think just kind of knowing that it's good that your first place you got to come to in this country was New York City.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this is the most diverse place in this country, and like I think it's like one of the most diverse places in the world, and like there's still like America. I mean, I'm sure parts of Europe can be very similar in terms of the racism and the xenophobia, right? Like, but in America, it's a real thing, and it's fucked up. And even in New York, it happens and it's fucked up. But there's just so many immigrants or kids of immigrants or whatever in this city, and that's like why New York is the greatest city,
yeah,
at least in America, because it's like we have everybody here,
yeah, you know,
and everyone can find a place. And I feel like even just chatting with you at the show the other night, like that's,
yeah,
that's what you were liking about New York, right? You saw people from all over the place, like out in the street talking to each other, like true, living life, you know. It's like a really beautiful place in that,
yeah,
in that regard.
I like New York. I really feel that people here also, not only like regular people, well, you know, when I say regular people, I mean like people out from the punk scene, but also in the punk scene, I see that people are so, they take solidarity very serious, you know, something that I would love to see, for example, in Barcelona or in Europe, like what is happening right now. Well, what happened for 70 years in Palestine is something that we have to speak about it, and we have to take position, you know. And I think that you guys, you know, whoa, on Friday I was literally saying, I don't know, maybe the 80% of the people there was wearing a kufiya, and that was great. That was I felt really overwhelmed because people here, well, what I saw, people here care, you know, and that's so important because punk is about solidarity too, you know, and we have to speak up against oppression. We have to speak up against injustice, and all these things are very important and they are part of punk too. So that's why I liked New York. And I think people here are doing a great job too. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad that that's kind of how it was perceived, because I do feel like, I feel like right now I'm personally like as proud as I've been of our scene for like actually stepping up on stuff and like caring about stuff, and like those people who are wearing a kufi at the show, like a lot of those people are doing like real serious organizing around this stuff and doing stuff that like, you know, like people in the punk scene in New York are like doing things in the streets in New York City that people all over the world have seen them do, whether they knew it was them or not. Yeah. You know what I mean? And like, we have the privilege to be at this like place where we can kind of like, you know, we, if we do get in trouble for what we're doing, we're, people are going to jail for a few hours and then they're getting out. Right.
Yeah.
You know, like some of the people here. So it's like, I'm really proud of this scene right now for like stepping up about Palestine in that way. Cause it's like, there have been times where people didn't like do as much as they could have been doing, you know?
Yeah.
And there's, you can never do enough.
Yeah,
you know?
True.
You know? And what's that like? I mean, I'd imagine in a lot of Europe, it's like not quite the same vibe at a punk show, especially in a place like Germany or something.
Oh my God. But Germany is crazy.
Fuck Germany. There's
Germany.
Nothing even to say about that place.
Yeah.
Nazis. what's the punk scene like in Barcelona right now when it comes to Palestine and being engaged and engaging with this horrible fucked up thing happening in the world?
I think that there is a few people who did, who's doing stuff too. Like, for example, this collective called Industrias MDA. They invited me to do like a DJ set too for some Journeys for Palestine, where they were like educating people so they can know what's going on. You know, it's just, it's not just, hey, let's be against Israel. Oh, okay. No, it's, let's get educated. Let's know history. Let's know who are we standing against too. And they're doing a great job. And yeah, I feel like Barcelona has not the same amount of punks that has New York, for example. We are a really small community, and they try to do what they can, you know. I cannot blame them, you know, but I feel like we have lots of work to do. I think that people are not really aware of the privilege situation of being white, you know, because here you have minas, you know, you have people from the Middle East, you have African punks, you know. We don't, you know, it's really very white. So it's kind of like, I wish they can just empathize a little bit about what's happening in the other side of the world, and just, I don't know, take just 2 minutes and do something, speak up, I don't know, educate your friends, talk about it, everything, even the smallest thing counts, you know, and every act is important. But yeah, I think we have a lot of work to do in Europe. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Your EP is called Victory Belongs to Those Who Fight for a Right Cause. Can you tell me about like what you were thinking about when you titled it that? And right now in this moment, does it feel, is there a different context for that, or is it still just kind of on the same shit?
Actually, That's not the name of the EP. The EP.
Fuck.
No, no, but it's not your problem. Yeah, it was not your problem. Is someone saw that that was what is written in the work card and said, okay, the EP is called like that, but it's a self title. You know, yeah. There is no name. But yeah, I like it. I will take it.
I do feel like there were like, I have you guys being a mysterious band when I was trying to like figure out a little what's going on, and I haven't had that record in front of me. I was like, what's up with this band?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's not like a lot out there to kind
yeah,
of
go. True.
So that's just a message that was written on the,
yeah,
straight on the cover or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a message. And when I put that there, I was thinking about, me and my struggle, you know, I struggle a lot, and I always felt like what I was doing was right because I was fighting for a right cause. And I think that I felt guilty for so many years because I wasn't what my family and my community expected me to be. But then I realized that, well, I think my cause is right, and I'm not fighting for, I don't know, killing children, for example. I'm literally fighting for freedom. So I think that every person that fights for good causes, victory belongs to them because they're already winning, you know? And yeah, it was a message for me and for everyone who struggles and fights for their own freedom. Yeah, I think, and right now, in Philly, when I played in Philly, like, what was it, 2 days ago, I said something about that thing, that victory. I said that being part of this, being in the U.S., playing with Haram, seeing MENA kids enjoying our music and starting like this kind of community that I always dreamed of is already a victory, you know? And I feel that I did a good job and I will not stop fighting. That's for sure. But I feel like it's super cool and it's the beginning of something, and we can already see it when in Europe we have Ikhras from London. We have Jenzir. They are based in Berlin. They had to kick someone from their band because they were like anti-Dutch or something. So fuck him. Oh, sorry. I don't know.
Yeah, you can say
okay.
You can say shit and fucking.
So yeah, Jenzir is dope too. There are people like starting new bands, you know, playing in their mother language, something that is very important to me because when I wrote that song in English, I had this kind of reflex. I said to myself, why I have to sing in English so people will like my music? Like, why not using my mother language to do punk, you know? You can do punk in your own language, it's okay. English, it's okay. It's okay for talking to people because it's kind of imperialist language, so everyone speaks English. But if you have that, it's kind of like it's rich, you know? You're rich because you have something that not everyone has, you know? Your story, the history of your people, it's also your language, you know? So doing a band in your own language is kind of like revolutionary act for me. It's like, okay, you don't fucking understand. I don't care, you know? Like, it's okay. I don't understand. When I was younger, I didn't understand English, and I used to listen to English bands, you know? So, yeah, I'm happy. And I think that this is the beginning of something, and I'm excited to see what's going to happen these next years with this harami punk going on. Not Taqwa Core, because fuck Mohammed Knight. He was a fucking Sorry, I'm being.
Go off.
You know, people.
The mic's on. We're here.
People be like, "Oh, I love this Taquacore band." No, we are not Taquacore band. Taquacore was created by a white dude who converted to Islam and started something out of from nowhere because he wrote a book. But I don't see myself in Taquacore. I play harami punk because I think it was haram who started this, and it should be harami punk, not Taquacore. That's all.
Long live harami.
Drop the
punk.
Mic.
Interview's over. The interview's got to be over damn soon, though, because we do have to go to your show.
That'll be great.
The band's going to open up pretty soon. We got a second. So I'm going to ask you one more question, and I'm going to leave it up to you if you want to say anything.
Okay.
But, yeah, I'm just wondering. I got plenty of stuff that you're talking about that I want to ask you so much more about, but I know that we have a limited, not only time right now, but also just people's mental capacity. So I'm going to leave a lot of those questions at the door. They'll stay in my head for the rest of my life. My question to you is, being a band that is mysterious, and also, you know, I don't know if you were like around or aware of like, this is stupid. I'm not going to go down that route. You know, the mystery guy hardcore. I don't know if that like was something that like your generation even like knew about.
About the being anonymous or something like that.
Yeah, there was like a specific like sub scene within like American hardcore that was kind of anonymous.
Okay.
And it was like this whole like trend of music, like bands like Sex Vid and Nazi Dust and Slave Scene and all these other like almost like fucked up was on in that world a little bit. We're not going to get into that right
okay.
now. It was a silly and interesting time. They made some good music. Like Cult Ritual was like great band. But being a kind of anonymous band.
Yeah.
But you admin revealed.
Yeah.
On your Instagram. So there's a certain level of no more on an anonymity.
Yeah.
Like, what does that feel like to you to sort of like be out there in the world? Like you haven't played a show yet with your face out, right?
No.
And your bandmates' faces aren't out, right? Like,
true.
What's your concept? What's your theory? What are you thinking about when it comes to being anonymous?
Well, at first I did it for my family because I was like, I think they had enough, you know, they had enough with my lifestyle, my how I look, you know. Now I kind of relaxed, but I my tattoos, the way I dressed, everything was, you know, I think that when I talk about this, I don't speak only for myself, but the weight of family, it's very hard, you know, when you want to be someone that your family doesn't want you to be, you start to protect your family too and be like, okay, I want to be this person, but I don't want to offend my family, I don't want to hurt them. So when I started Takbir, I was like, okay, I don't want my family to know about this because they used to harass me because of my lifestyle, blah, blah, blah. And then I had a few conversations with Nader, like in this tour, and that made me realize that I'm not, why I'm always living for my family, you know? I think that I deserve to be who I am, and I struggled a lot to be who I am today, so I don't want to hide anymore, you know? I used to have two different lives when I was in my house with my parents, and why I have to do this with all I struggled and everything that I did. And yeah, it was before the tour, I was like, yeah, fuck it. I will do a face reveal. And I'm not scared anymore. And if my family has something to say, I don't care, you know? It's their problem, it's not mine. I'm doing what I'm happy. This is what makes me happy, music, friends, experiences in life, traveling, this is what I live for, you know? And I really struggle a lot with mental health. I was really depressed a few years ago. And only the fact that I am here right now, sitting in front of you, enjoying life and doing what I want, music and meeting new people and having fun, is just a reason for me to say, okay, let's enjoy life. And I don't want to hide anymore and I want to be happy. So I just did a face reveal because I think that I deserve it. And I went through a lot and I want to people to know that, yeah, there is someone like, how do you say, behind Takbir, you know? There is no only ninjas there who plays and then disappear, you know? There is a person with a story, with a background, you know? And I want to people to know that I'm like them, you know? I'm not hiding anything. I'm from Morocco. People were like, yeah, they are not from Morocco. Yeah, I am from Morocco, you know? Takbir is me. Takbir is my story. The others, they are white, but they don't have anything to do with the band, you know? Well, they play music and they're really good musicians, but Takbir is me. And if someone has questions about Takbir, about my life, my story, just come around, ask me. It's okay, you know? But yeah, it's kind of weird to not be anonymous anymore. But it feels exciting too, because now people will recognize me before playing, like after playing and before playing. It happens in DC. Last night, people were like, hey, I'm happy for being here. And that doesn't happen in, never, only with Younes, this Moroccan guy that I met in Netherlands. So it's crazy. It's crazy. I have to get to used to these conversations. So yeah, it's kind of exciting. And what I want to say is, don't hide, don't protect people that don't accept you. It's okay. Family in our societies and in our communities and in our culture is very important, you know, but you only live once. And if you live for others, when you will be like, I don't know, 50, 60 years old, maybe more, 80 years old, you will think about this and you will say, shit, I gave my whole life to my own family. So my message is, just be who you want to be and fuck others. You know, even if it's your daddy, it's your mom, it's your sister, it's your cousin, fuck them, you know? Because someone who loves you will accept you no matter what. So that's very important. And this community we're building will accept you no matter what. And you will have family in every single town. And yeah, punk is your family. Just hold on and it will be okay. Everything will be okay.
Well, I'm happy for you.
Thank you.
I'm excited for you. And thank you for sharing a little bit of your story with me.
Thank you.
And with our listeners.
This was like a therapy.
That's great.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, at the end of therapy, right? Like when I go to therapy, right? And at the end, they say, so how are you feeling?
Yeah.
How are you feeling? What else do you want to say?
I feel good.
The mic is yours.
I feel good. I feel great. I think that this is very important, not only to me, so people can like listen to my voice, as knowing a little bit more about not only the band, but also about me. And I just want to say that, you know, sometimes you think that you don't belong anywhere and you feel sad and you feel like, yeah, this life isn't worth it. I just want to send this message about mental health, because I think that I don't speak I don't only speak for myself when I say that we lost a lot of people for mental health. It's a very serious issue. And I was there too. And I have days that I'm there, you know. It's normal. Sometimes you're down, sometimes you're up. It's okay. But I want to send this message because I know there is a lot of young kids that listen to Takbir, and I want them to know that you are not lonely, and it's okay to be sad, it's okay to feel lonely, it's okay to feel depressed, but don't get used to it. And if you need help, just, you know, speak up, say something to someone, say something to your friends, and if you want, just send me a message on Instagram and I will reply. It's okay, but keep going. I never thought I was going to make it to 25. Honestly, it's kind of crazy. But I'm here and I cannot be more happier, you know? And I think that's the only thing I want to say. I want to make... This is something that I always say in all the concerts that I do. Because that the last song that we play in live... Aisha bad sharha fil qalb. It's like, I live with this wound in my heart. It's because of one very important person in my life took his life 2 years ago. And it's very important to me to make this clear, okay? You matter and you belong here with us. That's all what I want. And I want that my music helps others. So if my music helps others, my job is done. So I'm happy. And that's all. This was really great. Thank you for having me here. It feels really nice to just let it go, you know? And I'm happy. I'm happy for this. And you, how you feel?
I'm chilling. I feel great. I feel like I learned so much. And you know, I'm glad I could be a part of this therapy session, you know?
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I also want to give you the chance if you got to say anything in your mother language too before we turn the mic off.
I just want to say Allah yahdina. It's something that my parents used to tell me when they looked at me and the way I dress, the way I live, they always like Allah yahdik. It's like may God help you. I think it's funny and yeah, I just want to say that tallaw fraskom. Ooh, I don't know. That's all. I think I said too much this weekend in my own mother language, so I don't know what to say anymore. And that's all. غني بالعربية وهادشي اللي كاين. تهلاو فراسكم.
Now, Takbir, Harami Punks.
Harami Punks.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Scene Report. I hope that you learned something about Now and about her band, Takbir. I know I sure did. Thank you so much to Now. I am your host, producer, and editor, Reed Dunley. Our executive producer is Ash Tyner. This episode was associate produced by Dane Winkler, and it was recorded in Dane, along with Dan and Chase's wood shop in Queens. So thanks for the location there. The theme song is by Jesse Crawford. The logo is by Kyle Seeley. And I want to say a special thank you to Nader Haram for starting the global Harami punk movement. Please rate, review, subscribe. Wherever you're tuning into this podcast, it helps us get out into the world. If you can like click those little buttons, rate, review, and subscribing. It's not just a thing us podcasters say. It's a real call to action. And we hope to see you sooner rather than later on Scene Report.